This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. So if I were to ask you, what race are Canadians? What comes to mind? All right, now if I were to ask you, what about the Mexican race? Exactly. So here in North Carolina and many states as well, U.S. children are trained from an early age to check boxes to indicate their race and ethnicity. And for race, we're often offered the following options: white, black, Asian, American Indian, or other. Ethnicity, a lot simpler. Hispanic, not Hispanic. Last month, Rosbelinda Cardenas has asserted an unpopular opinion on the website Latino Rebels. She said that she was both white and Mexican, and the comment section exploded. The conversation that followed explored the ways we oftentimes conflate race and nationality, and subsequently racism and xenophobia. Russ is co-dean of the Institutional Diversity and Inclusion and an assistant professor of anthropology and Latin American studies at Hampshire College and joins us now. Russ, welcome to The State of Things.
Hi, Frank. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you. Rather than use a lot of political theory and statistics, you chose to draw on personal stories to illustrate your point. Tell us about your trip to Disney World as a child.
Oh, my goodness. We're going to start with my childhood. Yeah, I think I chose this story because it was a story that really illustrated very sharply, I thought, from a very early on experience of being made to feel other. But this was an other that I think oftentimes, and I told the story of being waiting in Disney World to get in. I still think I remember it was a Michael Jackson show. And I'm talking to a white U.S. little girl. She was, I remember her as being blonde and blue-eyed, and I'm speaking in fairly good English, but I mispronounce a word, and she, the robot, which we Spanish speakers tend to have a trouble with the long and the short O's, and that differentiation, and the moment that I did that, she looked at me and said, and was clearly disappointed, and said, "Oh, you're Spanish?" And I just remember that moment very clearly. You know, it was a long time ago, and I still remember that as an experience of being othered. But I mention it in the article because I think it is an instance that in which one could confuse that experience, which was shocking and humiliating, but not exactly one of racism.
Well, let's talk more about that. I mean, these are interesting distinctions, and I thought that example does suggest that contrast very well. And other experiences you've had with shopkeepers profiling you as, quote, not seeming Mexican. Talk about the way that works, the phenotype, the way you appear, how that somehow confounds the question or confuses people, and why you think that confusion is exactly what we should talk about.
Right. So it might seem like a contradiction at first, right? Coming back to back with the story that I just told about Disney World, in which I am in the U.S. and I'm very, you know, one of my first experiences being in the U.S. And being made to feel an outsider. And then on the other hand, I tell the story of I live in East Harlem in New York City, which is in the past decade or so has gotten a very robust Mexican population. And, you know, I'm very lucky that in my neighborhood, there are a lot of shops that cater to Mexicans. And when I go into them, I am often, you know, even after, what has it been, 5 years of living in this neighborhood, very, you know, in my immediate area, people know me, but often when they don't know me and I come in and I speak Spanish, they look shocked or they respond to me in English, or, you know, when they realize that I speak fluent Spanish, they say, "Well, but you don't look Mexican." So how can both of these things be true, right? I think this is part of the question that I explore in that article.
Well, talk more about that. How do you identify yourself vis-a-vis these observations people make? Clearly, they have an idea in mind of what should look Mexican and how you should sound as a white American. And these are distinctions that you don't think we're making quite keenly enough, where we should be more careful in these distinctions.
Yeah, I guess I want to take a moment and be clear about the reason why I want to make this distinction. This isn't a distinction that I want to make in order to sort of to identify some kind of pride in being European descendant, because as I think is widely known, there is obviously a history of racial intermixture in Latin America. And I'm not interested in making that claim to sort of rescue, you know, a European ancestry and therefore distance myself from Mexican. So I want to make that very clear. The real reason behind it and why I'm sort of saying, no, actually, I have to wrestle with the fact that I'm white, and people around me are telling me that I'm white when they tell me, but you don't look Mexican, is because it comes out of, I think in terms of writing this article, a frustration that became much more clear in the summer over the increase in protests and around Black Lives Matter after, of course, the murder of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery, and many others. So it comes out of what I see as a refusal from non-Black Latinos, and I'm saying, going to say white Latinos, to distance ourselves from white privilege. So this is really the motivation behind it, and why I think the distinction is and the nuance is important, right? That we don't conflate nationality with race, and that even within all of these Latin American races, there are some of us who benefit from white privilege.
So tell us more about that, because that means that there's a far more contemporary edge to this. In other words, this idea of distancing yourself from your whiteness might be something that is perhaps more attractive in the last few months or over the past year than it might have been in years before. And so talk about why it's important to have this conversation.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, in the article, I call it the get out of whiteness card, right? I think that, yes, it's very attractive to distance ourselves, and I'm talking about not only partly European descendant Latin Americans and Latinos in the U.S., but also those of us who appear so, and therefore our life experiences are really marked by that, right? In a sense, when we were out about in the streets, people don't ask us for a DNA test. They don't ask us who our grandparents were. They simply treat us according to the way that we look, which is what you were referring to earlier. And of course, it's attractive to say, but, you know, I am actually from a country that is not thought of globally as white, where a lot of the population is, in fact, not white. And therefore, I don't have to respond to my complicity in white supremacy and anti-Black racism. So I think it is not that it is more attractive to do that today. I think that just there have been more people speaking against that. And this is also a contradiction, because just listening to your segment before, which was fantastic, this coexists with, in Latin America, with at the same time a whitewashing of our national identities. So on the one hand, we don't want the responsibility of being white. And on the other hand, we put forth to the world that a very whitewashed identity.
How does this conversation, how do you imagine this conversation taking place within Latinx communities, and sort of what what's the result of having this conversation?
Yeah, this is exactly what I wanted to do with the article, is to have that conversation in Latinx communities. And I will say that I first wrote the article in English and published it in a venue that has circulation, I believe, mostly with Latinx folks in the U.S., but I actually just today sent the translated version in Spanish to a venue that has circulation more broadly in Latin America. I think the two conversations I haven't heard the one in Latin America yet because the piece hasn't been published, but I imagine that the two conversations will be quite different. But in the U.S., what I have heard is a very visceral reaction against claiming or I just pointing out to our complicity in whiteness and to trying to push for people to own up to that. I think that people's experiences of other kinds of discriminations, marginalizations, xenophobia, particularly in the environment that we have been living in over the last 4 years, in which it has become heightened, that Latinos as a whole are not welcome in the U.S., I think that there is a strong resistance towards being able to say, yes, all of that is true, and some of us are complicit with white supremacy.
What would you say to the argument, though, that because of these other systems of oppression that are now working against people in Latinx communities, if they become identified as such, is the dominant issue, the dominant challenge, and that this other question of complicity, you know, at different levels, is not the right conversation to have now because of this other very pressing, need.
I think that's a really good question, Frank, and I thank you for asking that question, because I do think that the purpose is not to minimize. But I think what I would say to minimize other forms of oppression that Latinx people are facing in this country today. But I think that I would say that they cannot be disentangled, and that we need to look at all of these oppressions together. Right. So I don't want to discount the very real experiences of non-Black Latinx folks facing xenophobia in this country, and in particular Mexican people, and what sort of that. Saying Mexican, what that brings up in the U.S. imaginary for many people. So I don't want to discount it, but I guess I just want to be nuanced about it. And also from the perspective of people in the U.S., from the broader community, to ask to that it be recognized that Latin America and Latinx coming into the U.S. are multiracial, right? And that means that we are situated differently in relation to racism.
Well, the comment section, I want to get a sense of what you're seeing now, because the comment section for your article blew up. What was revealing to you about the way people are speaking about race?
Well, like I said just now, I think one is a very sort of knee-jerk rejection of an equivalence, any kind of equivalence between Latinx and whiteness. And I want to be clear that this is not an intent to say that every Latinx is white. I'd rather that some of us benefit from white privilege. I think the other thing that is not directly related to race, but that became apparent from looking at the commentaries and how they blew up in the publication, was another, this is kind of maybe tangential, but there were a lot of comments that had to do with the rejection of even the term X to use gender neutral language when referring to Latinx, and actually sort of using that to disqualify me and to say, well, clearly you are not a Latina, because real Latinas do not use that language. It's only white Americans that use that language. It's interconnected. I think, you know, both the reaction to my use of this neutral gendered language in the article was also a way to disqualify my observations. Mm.
Yeah, and I think one of the great values of this is not only, as you point out, your goal was to generate conversations within various Latinx communities, but then also to bring this conversation to the general public, if nothing else, to show the complexity of what it is. If I use a term like Latinx and get away with it, there are all sorts of populations in this country with very different political views, very different backgrounds, and longevities in this country that make up, you know, that fall under that umbrella. And I think, and I'll ask you to comment on this, that complexity, that diversity would be important for all Americans to understand, wouldn't you think?
Absolutely. And look, another, I think, nuance that I heard and I want to honor, and I heard loud and clear after the piece was published, was different kinds of comments from U.S.-born Latinx. As I mentioned in the article, I was born and raised in Mexico and came to the U.S. 20-some years ago, but have a very different experience than, say, even a member of my own family who was born and raised in Los Angeles, right? In a very racially and ethnically segregated society. I think that my experiences of coming to an understanding of my racial identity and a more global understanding of race are, of course, very different than that of a person who, from the very first moment they were born, have been told by people around them that they are not white because they're Mexican.
Well, talk about the conversations you've had with your teenage daughter about this and the factors that shape her ideas.
Yeah, she's a good example, right? Because she was born in the U.S. She's growing up in the U.S., and she's very much wrestling with these complexities. She asked me, and I narrate this in the article, "Mommy, am I a person of color?" And this is, of course, not this triggers a conversation, and it really moves me to think carefully about how to answer this. these are not easy conversations. These are difficult conversations for her. I will say that she has wrestled. It is, you know, she asked me questions of, okay, if I am white, then does that mean I'm not Latina? So again, how it is difficult to hold both of these things together. No, yes, you can be white and you are also Latina. And these are unpopular views, even amongst other Latinx folks in New York City, where we live.
Well, I want to thank you for helping us get this difficult conversation started. Thank you so much for being on the program. Ross Belinda Cardenas is co-dean of Institutional Diversity and Inclusion and an assistant professor of Anthropology and Latin American Studies at Hampshire College. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you, Frank.
North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.